I usually stand. Yes.
So that tonight's shiur will be divided into two parts. First is my own, continuing in the important topic of artificial reproduction. And the second half will be given by Rabbi Zev Leff, a very, very world-renowned speaker, who is going to be speaking on the inner meaning of Hanukkah, and it's benefiting a wonderful Kiruv organization called the B'lei V'Echad in Eretz Yisrael. Let us begin. One of the challenges of engaging modernity is applying theoretical abstracts that have been formulated a long time before they were really relevant to the modern world. And this is no exception. The topic for this evening is that of artificial insemination. And it begins in the Shulchan Aruch proper, in the opening Siman, Siman Aleph. What you have in front of you is a sefer called the Nishmas Avraham, Siman Aleph, which is a siman about Pru Revu. And the commentators on this on Siman Aleph quote a remarkable idea that if a woman somehow can become pregnant, what they call Ba'ambati. The Gemara speaks about this. I don't think it's even possible medically. What did the doctor say about that? I mean, impossible, right?
Long shot.
Long shot is one thing. It's like, such a long shot. I don't know if it's ever been documented in history, although the Chazal have a concept of it, respect to Ben Sira, Yirmiyahu, all kinds of interesting ideas. That's some say. Well, no, we won't go into that one. That's already politically charged. Could be. But the truth is that the for this reason, it's quoted in the Gemara, and in the Shulchan Aruch, that a woman should not sleep on a sheet that a man may have slept on because we're afraid she'll become pregnant from the sheet. And if she did, the child is kosher. Even though it's a child from a woman who's married to Reuven and the seed of Shimon. That's the abstract, nearly impossible, if not impossible, abstraction that the poskim talk about. And we just think about it as something which is wild when we learn the Shulchan Aruch. Until, believe it or not, in the relatively recent past, it's become something which is very, very practical. Despite the fact that the Vlad would be kosher, the poskim say you should not, should be very careful for fear that a person is going to marry a relative and they're marrying your sister, right? Because if this woman is married to Reuven, she thinks the children are Reuven, they're really from Shimon. Meanwhile, years down the road, sisters, brother and sister can marry each other. That's a question. The full question is really raised, will a person fulfill the mitzvah of Pru Revu in this kind of a case? If you take a look over here on page Yud, where he talks about the Gemara discusses this on the line 2, while this Aber Ba'ambati, and they bring a proof from the Gemara, Masech the Yavamas, we're not going into right now, that halachically that child is considered the son of the person whose seed was used for this insemination. And he quotes here Rav Yonas and Eibeshitz on the first beginning of the second paragraph, and his child is his son, the Chol Dover, and if the son will curse the father or hit the father, he'd be Chayav Misa, because he, you know, Makeh Aviv Imo Mos Yumos, Mekalel Aviv Imo Mos Yumos. One thing is, we can't do it because we can't prove, there's no way to prove who the father is. Now, that may change with the DNA, but at least in those days, there was no way to prove paternity with certainty in those cases. And the Taz, starting the second new paragraph, is mistapping. He's not sure. Isha shenis arba ba'ambati, that's our case in effect. Ima'av kiyem pru revu, v'nikre b'no l'chol dover. And although the Bach brought a proof, maybe it's only b'shmisafek, l'chuma, not l'kula, we're not 100% sure. And some go far as to say that really, no, ain't no nechshel de b'no. You see in the fourth line of this paragraph, he's not considered to be his son. He quotes from Shlomo Zalman. Shlomo Zalman is one of the most prolific writers when it comes to medical matters in recent generations. He has something quite remarkable. He has the following interesting hypothetical, but it's not so hypothetical, as we've already discussed. Kosei Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Someone who's hotzi azara l'toch kli, umeis below bonim. Can imagine, just imagine this case. A man is involved in what they call today IUI. IUI is intrauterine insemination, and it's often done from the sperm of the husband. For various reasons, he has a low sperm count, and they have to combine from different times. I'm not going into the detail, but it exists. Am I correct? Doctors, it does exist, an IUI from the husband. It's called AIH sometimes, artificial insemination from the husband. It used to be they would inseminate from the whole thing, then they started calling it IUI. They would wash it out, whatever. I'm not going into the details of how it's done in the labs and the fertility clinics. So the zera was collected, and they're about to put it in, and guess what?
He dies.
Without issue, as they say. He has no children. Shlomo Zalman always takes these beautiful hypotheticals and tries to prove a point from them, which you'll see soon. So he says like this, Afal Gavshin is Abra HaKach V'yol De'yela Shel Chayama, the third line of the last paragraph on page Yud. She had a child from his seed. Afilu Hachi, believe it or not, Chayeves B'yibu. Unbelievable. It says in the Torah that if a man dies with no children and he has a brother, the brother is supposed to marry the sister-in-law or give chalitza, but in an ideal sense to marry her. Now wait a minute. She has a child. It says that the husband dies with no children. Well, the husband did die with no children. A child came to him by some bonus after he was dead. Since he died with no children, therefore, he says that Yibam would take place. It's an amazing thing.
There was no pregnancy until after.
Nothing happened. They didn't. Right.
She would be pregnant.
No,
at the time.
That's a different story. She wasn't pregnant at the time.
You wouldn't say
Yibam. You wouldn't say Yibam. Right. That's what I might have thought that way. But that's a Gemara in the Sechta Kiddushin of Dalet. Zera, 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 Ein La, Ayin, Oleh. Right? He says no. He says, at the same time, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said it's his son. You're looking right. You have to be a goan for this. Av shavlad misyaches achrav ubno lechol davar. He is a son. Mikomakom kevin de b'shosh shemes bala. Adayin mechusa matzal achnasas hazer legufa miyad kvarchal olav oleha chovas yibum. It's amazing. The child will be the child of the deceased. He'll yarshin him because Yerusha doesn't depend upon the time of misa. Can come a yorish afterwards. Mind boggling. It's incredible. This is an amazing psak of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman. So he thinks that at first glance it should be obvious that the child is the child of the genetic father who donated the zera. And the last line of this page, he wants, why are the Gedolei Olam in doubt about it? Why not? Top line of the next column Yud Aleph. The Dvareinu, look what he writes. Habo al eshes ish v'nish garsh. This is another amazing hypothetical. Incredible. A man had relations with a married woman. Okay? Just think about this. I'll make a scenario which will make the tabloids. All right. A man has relations with a married woman. And her husband discovers it 5 minutes later. And he gives her a divorce. Take this, write the regret. He really has to, right? If he discovered her living with another man, she has it prohibited unto him. Sota, right? He divorces her 5 minutes after she's lived with this other man. 5 minutes later, he gives her a divorce. Meanwhile, the zera of the man, the other man, is swimming, taking some swimming upstream. And on its way to bump into the ovum to produce a child. By the time the zera swims upstream to meet its basheret, it's the ovum, she's already a divorced woman. What do you say? Is the child a mamzer or not? Who would think it's such a crazy thing? So Amichai says, there's not even a doubt for sure the child is a mamzer. Even though at the moment of conception, she's a single woman. No. How do you define conception? At the moment she lived with this man, she was married. But the moment that how do you define the beginning of life? When she got her get, there was a sperm here and there was an egg there. They had to cover ground. So, No, there's no question the man did an Issa. No one is saying that the man didn't do an Issa at the time. He's Chayav Misa. No question about that. She's also Chayav Misa. But the question will be, is this child considered a mamzer if by the time the sperm and the egg meet, she's already a divorced woman? She said, look at my get. Hey, my get. So Shlomo Zalman said, Havlad Mamzer. Like as Amichai said, I wasn't so sure. But Havlad Mamzer, why? That's the beginning of the pregnancy. It takes a while for it to catch. How do you like that? That being the case, which again to me is a chiddush, but that being the case, of Shlomo Zalman reasons, wait a second. Maybe only through a marital relations, to relations between the man and the woman, dafkai debia, teichav and pleitas hazera, where the choshev kitchila seirayon. So when the zera leaves the man's body, that's considered halachli to the beginning of the pregnancy, and therefore lachen abein maskil shapir lisyaches teichav achrof. At that moment that the zera leaves the husband's body, the man's body, I should say, there's a relationship established between father and son, paternity. Paternity in the natural world is when the zera leaves the man into the body of the woman. However, if it was a case of ambati or artificial insemination, so then what? You're going to consider the beginning of the pregnancy to exist when the man zera is lying in a sperm bank for 20 years? That's the beginning of a pregnancy. That's too fanciful. Here, Shlomo Zalman's genius. When the man lives with a woman, so as soon as the zera leaves his body, it's considered to be the beginning of a pregnancy, even though we know it takes a while until it meets the egg, until it's whatever. But if it's in a sperm bank, it's too much to consider that the beginning of a pregnancy. You have a question? Yeah.
Defining what pregnancy starts, why don't we just define mamzer as the product of an illegal relationship? And then it doesn't matter when...
Well. It's a very good point. The suggestion is being made that a mamzeris is the result of an illicit relationship. So it's irrelevant what happens. It's irrelevant. What is Rav Shlomo Zalman talking so much over here for? Why are we considering tchilas hirayon? Just say it. An illicit relation took place. A child resulted. We don't even care if we'll say that the pregnancy began when she was a single woman because she was divorced already. It should be irrelevant. Now she's single, who cares? But the illicit relation took place while she was married. That's your question. So Shlomo Zalman, for some reason, is not happy with that. I hear what you're saying. He wants to say that, no, the reason why the child is a mamzer is because the pregnancy began. Right.
He would say that's not a month. That's right. Not for Shlomo Zalman. That's why it's not the result of this relation. It's not when this relation results in this in the zera getting in it immediately.
Yeah, but I think that we can agree to your definition that it's an illicit relationship, but it has to be an illicit relationship which results in a child. You wouldn't say if a woman has an illicit relationship with a different man other than a husband, and then she does artificial insemination with somebody else that the child's a mamza just because she has a different illicit relationship. Has to be the list stage which produces a child, right? So your case was Zerah B'chutz. He would agree that would not be a mamzer.
Gotta say like this: it's Zerah B'chutz, but I'll be good for the isha. 10 minutes later, it swims upstream. So what would Shlomo Zalman say? He'd say that's not a mamzer. If you're not going to do Zerah B'chutz, I'll be good for the woman. But also Shah, 10 minutes later, it swims upstream again, and that happens. So you have that.
I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't know. I can't put words into Shlomo Zalman's mouth. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't want to put words into his mouth. Yes, ma'am.
What happens if the husband has relationships with the wife and the next day she has a relationship with another man?
Right.
And she becomes pregnant.
From the other man?
But you don't know.
That's a very famous case. The Gemara, in fact, says that even if a woman was involved in something which is illicit, we the psak is that the child is kosher, because rov ve'ilos achar habal. So even a woman who is engaged in illicit activity, that the majority of her relationships are with her husband. So we attribute it to the majority. That's before DNA. DNA is a very, very dangerous tool. As a matter of fact, when I was involved in DNA with the World Trade Center Agunas, and I wrote the shayla up for the Rabbanan to Paskin, I put in there that even if you'll say that we should follow DNA, we can argue that not only is it the fact that the DNA test will show a negative test, that this child that the woman produces is not her husband's, that will certainly not be sufficient to call the child a mamzer, because perhaps the father is not a Jewish person. If a non-Jewish person has relationships with a married woman, the product is not a mamzer. It's prohibited, but the child is not a mamzer. So maybe it's coming from a non-Jew. Then they ask me, what happens if they have positive? She knows, this man knows who that boyfriend is. It's him. X is Jewish. Test him and test his child. And they do. And it's a perfect match. So then you're finished. It has to be mamzer. Not necessarily. Could be it came from artificial insemination. That's what I actually wrote there in that piece. People raised their eyebrows. What I'm trying to write. Well, I've got such a far-fetched way. We try very hard. Very, very hard to avoid passing about someone that the person's a mamzer. Very, very hard. We're dealing with a case right now, a serious, serious case in which there was a marriage, at least there's a documentation of a marriage by an Orthodox rabbi, and there was a get given when she was 8 months pregnant from her second marriage. And on the document of divorce, it says, you should know that, they wrote in Hebrew, that now people should understand it, when she got this get, it was kreisa bein shineho. That is a phrase which the rabbis used to refer that she's pregnant. Then it says vav dalid lamed, which means v'dayla chakima. You figure out that there's a major problem with this child. Review. She was married to X, and then she, with a civil divorce, no get, she married somebody else, and then she's 8 months pregnant, she comes to the rabbi to give her a get.
The second man.
No, the get from the first man. So the rabbis who wrote the document of divorce wrote on the bottom, you know, it was a footnote. Not nun beis. Shabal lefoneinu hasakreis hashbein shineha vav dalet lamet. Now the only way to make this child kosher, the only one way that I know about, is to somehow undo or not give sufficient credibility to the first marriage. That's what we're working on. I have a meeting about it on Monday. This is a serious matter. By the way, the boy who was produced by this second marriage has no clue. He's sitting in a very famous yeshiva in New York City and has no clue that this problem even exists. How do we find out? It's a long story. A cousin came to one of the rabbis. A whole long story. We're going to try our best to declare that we have insufficient proof of the first marriage, so we're not going to declare that the child is a mom. So that's the only way out. So we try very hard to not make mamzer. And remember, there's a famous rule which helps us out. Mamzer vadai, velo mamzer sufek. Gemara tells us that if it's a doubtful mamzer, at least by Torah law, we don't view it as a mamzer, and that's what we're going to try to work on. Hope it has a happy ending. I don't know. We have a big meeting to try to help out. So here too, I said, maybe it's from artificial insemination. I don't know if that's a very small chance, but still, perhaps that might be good enough. What I was trying to say is to convince the Rabbanim to accept DNA in the Aguna case and not be worried about what we're going to do when it comes to the Mamza case. That's what I was trying to write in that question which I raised at the time, way back when. Okay, so now, so back to Rabbi Shlomo Zalman on page Yud Aleph in about the 10th line, we can say, Evsher the kol shena yachas maschil. The line is the word maschil. Maschil techef. Doesn't the relationship between father and son does not begin immediately? Shuv eno kol zeru maschil. Can't go on. Can't start later on. Came in the poska. It stopped. Catch this now. V'roin also kimi. The line starts sheyesh. Lo rak aim v'lo av. Can you imagine that? Here's a man with a mother but no father. What's this, immaculate conception? No. There clearly is a biological father, But since there was no normal relations which could produce the halachic relationship between the biological father and the biological child, so although there is a biological father, there's no halachic father. We had this before. If the father is not Jewish, we discussed it in the last week's shiur. Remember, because of the sheets we gave out, that there's no halachic relationship, although there certainly is a biological one, between a non-Jewish father and a Jewish child that he produced through a Jewish mother. Here too, it's possible to say. It's a possibility. We do. Only when it comes to that's what he thinks. That's what he thinks. He feels this way. He gives a proof. What will happen that if a non-Jewish man has a non-Jewish child? Chris is married to Chrissy. They're both not Jewish. And they have a child. That child does relate to the father. And the proof is, if everybody converts to Judaism, he fulfills Pruru. So therefore, in the bottom line, let's see the bottom line over here. I'll be reading the next paragraph, Hagon Shlita, the next paragraph, on page Yud Aleph, the first new paragraph on the page halfway down. Aleph, Mutter likach mizera habal velasos hazro melachusis beishto gabi mei nidusa. Even though the woman is a nida, and she can't live with her husband, you can still do artificial insemination at that time. It's very, very important. Very important. Why is it very important? Because very often, as we call orthodox infertility, she cannot get to the mikveh in time to have a child. She ovulates before she gets to the mikveh. So the solution might be, do...
Why do you care in Epsha? What's the difference with
Epsha? He likes it better. He likes it better that she should be non-nida, but whatever, in Epsha. I had a case, a literal case, this week. I like to be current cases. This week, I received a call from a rabbi. As a woman in the shul who has an estrogen patch, part of the infertility treatments, and he asked me a question: can she go to the mikveh with the estrogen patch? And she's due to have an insemination the next day. So I said, I don't understand. Take off the estrogen patch, go to the mikveh, and put it right back on again. And I was called him with a doctor sitting at my side. And he says, no problem, it can be done. How's she going to put it back again? Take a piece of tape and put it back again. What's the problem? Huh? There's no problem. This woman is just too nervous, too tense, too anxious to do anything. So look, if she's too anxious, she wants to postpone the mikvah later, I'm not going to stop her. She may have the insemination anyway, while she's in Nida. But I'm just telling you, the real life story happened this week. In any event, he's worried it should be done by a rofe neman, someone who's reliable, shouldn't mix anything up. Should really have two people there, you know, like a shomer they have. Amazing. And then he goes to the other case which we spoke about earlier. So now we've given this idea, so far we've spoken about what's called RUI from the husband, and we have established that according to almost all authorities there is a relationship between father and son, although there's a minority view which disagrees. Now it comes to the hard part. Number two, Hazra Malachusis Me'ish Zar. The husband is unable to have any children. He just has no sperm, zero. And he cannot have a child. And the only way for her to have a child is to have it from the Zara of another man. What do you say? So he writes as follows, Aldas Kolaposkim Amuvorim Le'el Osir Levatzea Hazra Malachusis Me'ish Yehudi Zar Le'eshesish. Prohibited. And many poskim say it's a Torah violation based upon what? Lo sitein shechav tochal azara. Footnote 69. Vayikra yudches chav. If you look in the parasha of Arayas and Achimos, it keeps saying lo sigaleh, which means talk about Gili Arayas. Suddenly, in the middle of nowhere, when it comes to adultery, it uses a different expression. Lo sitein shechav tochal azara. So on this basis, there are these giants of Allah who maintain that adultery is different from all other violations. All other violations is the relationship itself which is prohibited. When it comes to adultery, no. Of course, we want to establish proper paternity, and therefore it's prohibited. In which case, they say, even in the absence of any prohibited relationship, there is a Torah violation on the act. Get the status of the child. The act itself is an absolute Torah violation. That's what they claim. It's prohibited for a woman who's married to have artificial insemination from a donor under pain of a Torah violation. Isa min ha-Torah. Who comes and says disagrees?
Jewish donors.
Even if it be a non-Jewish donor, would be prohibited because they say that the it's a. Slowly, we're going slowly. We're going to speak first. The reason why we're talking about a donor who's Jewish is because the fundamental question is there a problem of a mamzer if it was done? If it was done from a non-Jewish donor, there cannot be a problem of mamzer, because even if she lived with a non-Jewish man, we paskin the child is not a mamzer. That's why he started with a Jewish donor. He quotes Rav Moshe, the last two lines, that if you recall, we spoke earlier, that a woman who's married should not sleep on a sheet that another man had slept on. Why? Last line here on page Yud Aleph. Hatamu b'din gzeira shema yisachos l'meyoviv. In other words, the only thing that these gedolim were worried about is that what? Chas v'shalom, a brother marry a sister. Why don't they say better than that? It's a Torah violation. You can't. It's a Torah violation. You're producing a mamzer. So Rav Moshe says, "V'ein zeh shayches l'znus klal." Turn the page, please. V'chein ein hayalad mamzer ki ein kan ma'isa bia. Finished. But the question becomes: it says, "Lo sita en shchav tochal azara." So he quotes here Rabbi Avadia Yosef, and his Yabia Omer, line 2. You can't make up your own drasha. How can you say such a thing? It's based on your interpretation of a pasuk. You have no right to do that. Absolutely no right. Of course, the question is, do others agree or disagree? So many poskim disagree and say it's not true. It's absolutely not true. Not true. There are many Rabbanim who have permitted it, and even though Rav Moshe writes in a subsequent tshuva on page Yud Gimel, I never really permitted it, only in some cases, only if a Rav Muvak is consulted, etc., etc., etc. This is only because he was dealing with people who he had to deal with. But it says you can't change the din. You can't change it. You can't change the din. The din is that the child is not a mamzer. You can't. You can't change the din. Impossible. So this is a very hard question. So what I want to talk about, I thought we'd talk about it next time, but I'm not sure if our guest speaker is anywhere to be seen. Maybe someone can walk outside and see if he's there, because I don't want to take his time. I could talk another hour for sure, but I don't want to take away from someone who's supposedly coming. The mixed zera is a bluff. It's a total bluff. He talks about over here, they mix zera. Apparently, when they mix it, it's just to make the husband feel good. That's what I was told. The husband's zera is not potent. So they say, well, mix your zera with somebody else's zera. Hey, that's called in the Gemara's expression, ze yochol v'zeinu yochol. The husband himself cannot have a child. The donor can't have a child. So what are you mixing in? That's what I was told by the experts. No such thing as a mixed. Well, there is such a thing. This does exist. Is that if the husband's zera is lacking in the count, if they gather zera from more than one time from the man and put it all in together in one shot, it can rise to the number of millions that are necessary with the motility, with the whole story, to be able to produce a child. I mean, is that still correct? That's what I was told years ago. That might be something which works. But the idea of mixing, aside from the innate repulsiveness that we all instinctively feel, but aside from that, it's usually just a bluff. That's what I was told. What may not be a bluff is in the case of a woman, and let me talk about this now for a minute, and this actually exists in certain cases. In the case of a woman, I spoke about last week about donor eggs, so again, I need my experts in biology, medicine, to tell me if I'm not using the right phrases, but the egg has two parts. I think it's a nucleus and a plasma. Are those the right two terms, I mean, worldly speaking, generally speaking? The nucleus is where the DNA is. That's the... But it swims in the plasma. Now, you can't have one without the other. Now I'm told that there could be a woman who's lacking in the plasma. That's not the, that's not really the, where the DNA is. That's just it's what swims in. So they try to have the following situation. They'll take the nucleus from the woman, from the wife herself. Reuben's married to Rachel. They're not having any children. They're not having children regularly. They're having children with IVF. It's not going because her plasma is insufficient. Again, I'm not an expert. I'm speaking approximations. And then they will use the plasma of some other donor. Will just donate plasma. And they will somehow combine with the nucleus of the wife. So the genetic mother is still the wife. Husband and wife having a genetic child between the two of them. And the other person is just donating, not the whole egg, donating the plasma. Is that, I'm asking the doctor, does that make any sense what I just told you? It seems to me, back to my own sheet from last week, that in fact that would be a much better situation. Because then the genetic mother is the mother, in my view. Even though half the donation of the egg is coming from a different woman who's donating the plasma. It gets very... I'm not sure. I'm not fine if they're really doing it. At one point they were talking about doing it. I'm not sure if they're really doing it on a regular basis. I'd like to find out if you can find out for me for next week. Oh, next week is no Shia. Next week is Shabbos Chanukah. That's what we always give off most of Shabbos Chanukah. We have their family parties. It's very important. No, the following week is not no longer Chanukah. Motzei Shabbos is after Chanukah. No one has any Chanukah mesibus or any candle lighting the following week. So we will have a Shiva Shiva the following week, I hope, if people can come. But not next Motzei Shabbos. Okay. So that's where you have a possibility of maybe something equivalent could exist with respect to the Zera. We have I'll give a mushroom. Again, I'm not a doctor. The little I understand is that what the husband expels is mostly prostatic fluid, and the zera swims in the prostatic fluid. Let's say they could only impregnate the woman when the zera swimming and this guy's prostatic fluid is somehow not working. I don't know what the words mean here. I'm just throwing out the terms in theory, but his zera is very very strong, so he would mix together Reuven's zera proper with the prostatic fluid of Shimon and throw the whole thing in and make the woman pregnant, that would be something similar. Where, again, if I don't know, that's a point of fact. I think nowadays they shoot this area without any fluid. They bypass, you don't need the fluid. But I still think you need the plasma. I don't think of an egg. I don't think you can get around that one. Who knows? We live in a brave new world of all kinds of medical advances, and I'm not sure what the future will in fact bring. What I really wanted to discuss today, and maybe we still have a chance to discuss it if I'm still talking, is the question of what is the halachic status of the child of a Jewish woman who's married to Reuven and she is impregnated with the seed of Shimon. Yes, I know there are those who don't like it because they're afraid her brother's going to marry her sister. But that's a technical question which has possible solutions. We spoke about it last week, but the possible solutions in the case of IVF, of a donor egg, you find it the birthday, and you find the same birthday trick can work here as it works there. It's the same fundamental idea. However, the question will become, is there a situation, leave my brother sister, is there a mamzeris problem or not? That's a very, very serious question. Would there be a situation of mamzeris? So Rav Moshe said, we just read it on top, Ein hayeled mamzer. Rav Shlomo Zalman, 8 lines later says, Hayeled hu safek mamzer. He's not willing to make a decision one way or the other. And the question becomes, well, what should it be? Who's right on this question? That's what I want to talk about a little bit. I'll start now and we'll just keep talking. I didn't bring my source sheets that I thought it would be for next time, but let's just talk for the moment about Peh. The big question is, as Rav Moshe writes on the top line of page Yud Beis, V'chein ein ha'yelad mamzer ki ein ma'isa biya. This is no illicit relationship. The child cannot be a mamzer. I already told you a couple of weeks ago, Rav Moshe went even further than that and said even if there's a real actual mamzer who will procreate through artificial insemination, he's already a mamzer. The child will not be a mamzer. That's even more incredible because they're not just a question of making a mamzer, it's a question of continuing the status of mamzer. Even that not. That's a tremendous chiddush. Excuse me. There are Moshe has in one of his truths. He pointed out that on that basis, if Rav Moshe is right, someone who's a mamzer can marry a gioris, have children only through artificial insemination, and become kosher. To quote the Mishnah, yichol le mamzerim lehitar, which we never had such a possibility before, but now we have a possibility. Okay. I can't answer that question. Rav Moshe's chiddush is a tremendous chiddush, but maybe there is someone who's doing it that way. I can't say for sure. I don't know. And here you have an amazing thing. Even a mamzeres can have a kosher child, because you call mamzerim l'tor, was you get married to a gioris, the child is a mamzer if they have normal children the regular way. The case of the Mishnah is a man who's a mamzer marries a shifcha. What does a shifcha mean? What's a shifcha mean? A woman servant. Mamzer is permitted to marry a woman servant, the Gemara says so, and have a child, that child is not even Jewish. The child is not Jewish. The child is the same status as the mother, which is called quasi-Jewish, non-Jewish, but not a full Jewish person. Then that child can convert, become a kosher Jew. The problem today is, where do you find a shifcha? Lincoln emancipated the slaves in America. There are no slaves. So how do you have a shifcha today? That's a matter of major dispute among the various poskim. My Rebbe, you have salvation, there can be no slaves today. Maybe he would admit that if you go to a certain country, I think Sudan, I think still allows, is that all right? Sudan allows slavery?
No, but there are slaves here where people bring housekeepers over and bring slaves.
They enslave them de facto. But they're not slaves. We are. There's no slavery in America for a long time. For a long time. But okay. But if you would find a slave, some people say you can have a slave. You can have a slave. And I saw my Rebbe Reb Zalman Nechemer, the whole pilpul, I could have make a slave a name only. Because if you learn the sugars of slavery, Hamaf Kiravdo Tzorach Get Shichur. So you can make a slave, emancipate the slave monetarily, and you can still have the status of a slave from the perspective of, oh, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. Okay, no, I'm finished. I was just stalling. But you know, the next time we will continue with this topic, we are very, very privileged. It's a distinct honor that Rav Zev Lev Shlita, who was known as one of the most prominent, internationally acclaimed speakers of our generation, was spoken at so many much more significant gatherings than this. I mean significant only numerically. He's spoken in front of thousands of people. And we are privileged in our own little small shul that Rabbi Lev has agreed to give us some inspirational words on the inner meaning of Hanukkah. Without any further ado, Harav Zev Lev Shlita.